We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, my name is Katie Hunt and welcome back to Proof to Product. In 2020, diversity, inclusion, and equity rose to the forefront of conversations about how we are conducting business. There was a lot of talk in the online business world about reassessing company values, how we can include diverse images and copy in our marketing, and simply being more intentional about how we're weaving inclusivity into our branding and our marketing and our customer experience. However, a missing piece to this was our technology. Today's guest is my friend, Myrna Daramy. She is a tech-savvy digital media optimization specialist, and she's oftentimes referred to as the tech whisperer amongst her clients. And she has spent the last year diving deep into what it means to have diverse, inclusive, and accessible technology within our business. She has done research, she has conducted interviews, and she has identified solutions for how small business owners can ensure that their digital home is welcoming for all. So today we are specifically talking about misconceptions around digital inclusivity, three reasons why you want to make accessibility a priority for your business, and simple solutions that you can implement right away. Now, before we jump in, I wanted to let you know that Myrna will be joining me inside of my Proof to Product Labs community in July. We are going to dive even deeper on today's topic in a live training. She will walk us through strategies, solutions, and be available to answer questions from our students. To participate in this live presentation, enroll in Proof to Product Labs by going to prooftoproduct.com/labs. Labs is my 12-month group coaching program where we cover a wide range of operational topics, things like marketing strategies, technology, hiring help, pitching the press, and managing your money. There is no reason for you to grow your business alone. So come connect with other product makers and learn from myself and other experts. Again, you can join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs. All right, let's dive into today's episode with Myrna Daramy. Hey, Myrna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Katie. I'm so honored to be here, honey.
I am excited to chat with you today because this is such an important topic. All of us need to be considering how to make our websites more inclusive and accessible to a wider audience of visitors. And I think this is something that a lot of people aren't aware of or don't realize is something they need to be paying attention to. So thank you for coming to share your knowledge and some solutions with us today. Let's kick this off by talking about misconceptions. What misconceptions do you see when it comes to discussions about accessible and inclusive websites?
Yeah, so the one misconception I will say specifically with the word inclusivity or diversity is that I feel like after the awakening and the, I guess, I don't know what I want to call it from last year, but there was definitely some, you know, new awareness brought to the fact that companies today are not being as inclusive or diverse as they need to be. Mm-hmm. I think people have dropped or limited their thought process as to thinking like what disability or what diversity or what inclusivity is, where yeah. they're thinking it's race related, like BIPOC, it's LGBTQ+, but they're not thinking about one other demographic, which honestly has literally been the stepchild to all of these things for the longest time, which is disability. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time specifically in the last year or so diving into just inclusivity as a whole and realizing that there's this whole other area that people haven't even tapped into in becoming aware. So that would say, I would say misconception number one is that diversity inclusion includes a whole other demographic that I think people aren't aware of. And that is disability, which is about 15% of the world. So that's wow. misconception number one.
What's misconception number two? I see
misconception number two, it's coming. The fact that, okay, according to the CDC, 15% is the demographic that they use for percentage of people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I just had a conversation with a woman who's in Canada who is actually of this demographic. She's autistic. And she was saying, honestly, that demographic, the percentage is wrong because there are a lot of invisible disabilities. There are a lot of people who don't deem themselves as disabled, mm-hmm. specifically because we think from a physical or identifiable aspect of disability, like blind or hearing impaired or using a wheelchair of some sort or some kind of
physical disability.
Assistive, mm-hmm. Yeah, assistive type of apparatus to help them. But the reality is, I mean, it's actually a lot more than that. So That's misconception number two, for sure.
Okay, this is fascinating to me because, and this is just an aside real quick, I promise we'll get back to the topic, but I've been talking to a lot of my clients who are grown women and who are starting to feel like maybe they have ADHD or ADD. And these are things that, you know, they were never tested for. So to your point, there's a lot of people that may not realize that they fall into this category, or they may not consider themselves in that category, but they may find out later in life too, that like, oh, whoa, that feels like me when I read this description of these things.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, Katie, I mean, to your point, I read something the other day, which kind of had me like shook, was the whole concept of this is the one demographic that at a moment's notice, like you can become a member of, like, God forbid anything were to ever happen where you get into an accident or something, you know, tragic happens in that realm, you could then be part of that world. So that kind of shook me and actually had me even more empowered to like really dive in, learn from this demographic as much as I could and become an advocate and an ally in making more digital inclusive spaces. So
I've really enjoyed hearing about the research you've done, and we're friends. And so behind the scenes, I've been hearing about the interviews you've conducted and the deep research you've done. And I just have found it really inspiring and also fascinating too. So I appreciate you sharing with me, not just as a friend behind the scenes, but also here with our audience too. What does an inclusive website look like? Meaning, what accommodations does an ADA compliant site need to offer visitors to our sites?
Yeah. So the thing I think people need to know too, there are some differentials here. So having a diverse website basically means that you are providing an imagery or a content or context that can apply to a diverse audience, mm-hmm. meaning that you're not so targeted on a specific demographic. You're opening it up so that it's inclusive to all. So there's that physical, visual standpoint of having a diverse or an inclusive website.
Having a site that reflects the people you're talking to.
100%. Yeah, or the people that you want to talk to. Because I think a lot of times people may have the site and they're like, oh, well, I'm not reaching out to this person. So the goal is, how do I speak the same language and make people feel that they're welcome here?
Right.
And so that's diverse. That's inclusion. Then when you start to talk about like ADA compliance, which is a whole other ball game, where ADA compliance, and just a little history, I'm not going to get too deep into it, but it started originally from, and it, where it comes from, ADA, the acronym, is the American Disabilities Act. And it started in 1990, and it was meant for physical locations to accommodate publicly mm-hmm. for people who have any disabilities. So it was a very physical, identifiable law that was passed where people utilizing any type of help to get into buildings, specifically public buildings, needed to be accommodated for. So fast forward to now, especially after 2020 and with COVID, where the question and the gray lines of, I can't have my physical location open. I can only deal with, you know, public accommodating any of my audience online.
Yeah.
Now we have shades of gray as to say whether or not my website or the places that I'm online are deemed to have to be ADA compliant. And so also with that, there's a government body, federal body that's regulating rules and guidelines. They're called the, you know, W3C, which is consortium, World Wide Web Consortium. That's what it stands for. They create guidelines on how to standardize how people are utilizing the web and how websites should be accommodating for as standards to visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so recently, they added some guidelines, which basically kind of bled into the whole ADA compliant thing, where now they're saying, okay, in order for your website to be deemed more compliant with the ADA guidelines that we've already put in place, we're updating them. And so this is where you need to say your website is now accessible.
Mm.
And so that's the word that I feel like, you know, when we say diversity, inclusion, the last word we need to add to that and is your website accessible?
Accessible. So this is fascinating to me. Like, I think the diversity and inclusion portion of this conversation has come up for the past year in a more of a marketing sense, if you will, of make sure you're speaking to a wider audience and opening your arms to like a wider range of people with different backgrounds. But this really does extend, it goes past the marketing into the technology of our sites
too. Exactly. Because with people who have any disabilities, a lot of times they utilize what's called assistive technology in order for them to have better website experiences. So things like a screen reader, things like captions, or like anything specifically when it comes to audio, making sure that there is an ability for them to be able to hear what you're showing is important. So accessibility in the last, I'd say literally 6 months, has become like this huge buzzword and really something that people have been needing to pay attention to, because in the whole world of saying you're inclusive, that also extends to that demographic as well and making your website accessible to all.
I'm over here nodding my head. Yes, I feel like a lot of the conversation has been about things like Instagram captions on stories or IGTV. Right. And, you know, that those are very important. I'm not minimizing that. But this is much broader than that. And our digi home, as you call it, you know, like it's important we protect that. So let's talk about the risks of not having a diverse, inclusive, and accessible website. One of my friends last summer received a letter from a law firm that basically said, your site's not accessible. And I don't recall if they threatened to sue or whatever, but like it was a like pretty eye-opening experience to read a letter like that. Yeah. So, and that's not the, you know, legal protection isn't the only reason to do this, but let's talk about why making our site diverse, inclusive, and accessible should be a priority for all business owners, especially those that are operating online.
Oh yeah, 100%. So I'll say the first is the risk management factor, because the reality is when it comes to these lawsuits and demand letters, they have been on the rise. Like even between the year 2018 to 2019, it went up like 200% of people getting these letters, to your point, like you're a friend that people are demanding for them to make their websites accessible because they're not able to purchase or do whatever you're requesting them to do. So that in itself has become a big why as to why you should make your website accessible, because of the potential threat of being sued and or sent these demand letters that would have you go down this rabbit hole of trying to fix something that could cost a lot of money in the long run, whether you're sued or, you know, again, somebody comes after you with these demand letters. So, and they stand in the court of law, which is kind of the scary part, but yes.
Totally. And I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize.
No.
I know we'll get into solutions in a little bit for this, but I will say when my friend got this letter, she was like, oh my God, like, what solutions do I have, you know? And like the thought process that you go through in that situation is, oh my gosh, do I have to pay a developer thousands of dollars to like do some special coding or what? So we'll get into solutions in a minute. But yeah, so risk management is one consideration here. What about the fact that people should be wanting to reach a wider, more diverse audience? I mean,
100%. I mean, yeah, you're basically losing money, especially, and I said this, I feel like I talked to you about this when we were having one of our like personal conversations, but the reality is, I mean, people are raw right now. Any marginalized community is feeling very raw.
Yeah.
They're looking to see if a business earns their trust back and is basically seeing them for who they are. And so with this demographic, the same thing goes, like they are looking and they're really like, they're doing their research. They're looking to see whether or not they have any representation within your business whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it's important if you're going to want to hopefully increase your visibility, increase more potential customers or clients, that you include this demographic or make your website more accessible and inclusive, because at the end of the day, you're losing money if you're not.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's bigger deal. And then I also think there's a moral issue in that too, because I think a lot of what we've stood for, especially after the pandemic and being brought inward and having to shift all these things around and quote unquote pivot, that magical word. I think that so many businesses have had to ask themselves, like, what do they value? What do they need to cut out? What do they need to add in order to sustain or keep alive? And I think it's now come down to, you know, what are your values as a business? If you're inclusive, that means that you're thinking of all the things. You're not just having tunnel vision anymore. And so I think it's also that as well.
I agree with you. In fact, I went through a whole process. I'm making this personal again, but here we go. I went through a whole process, you know, middle of last year, towards the end, of reevaluating our company values. And I'm trying to be much more outspoken about the things that are important to me as an individual and the things that matter to my community and the things that I want my brand to stand for. And I went through a very deep process of that, down to like identifying what those things are, then looking at our website of how we could include that, looking at our copy and looking at how we're speaking about things and looking at what I'm sharing on social media and all those things, right? But then I taught it in labs and I said, this is what I did. And I shared what I had put together and kind of encouraging others to do the same, because I think now more than ever, we do need to be taking a look inward at like, how do we want to be perceived? Who do we want to attract? How are we going to make our brand much more open and inclusive to a wider range of people? Okay, so we talked about the risk management. We talked about the inclusivity factor and the potential loss of revenue too by not making your site inclusive. The other thing I want to touch on here is the client experience or the customer experience. When your site is diverse and inclusive and accessible, it's just a better experience for your customers. And I know you and I have talked about like, even if people aren't disabled or have seeing problems, maybe they want the font bigger, or maybe they want some of these things that will make it easier for them to stay on your site longer and absorb more of your content or purchase more of your products or whatever it might be. Do you want to speak to that?
Oh my gosh, exactly. Like to your point, I mean, I've seen it where there are websites out there specifically that their fonts are tiny or they're utilizing some cursive font. And it's like, even for me, who technically doesn't have any disabilities, I'm like, what are they trying to say here? Like, I have a hard time reading and understanding and connecting with the content they're putting out. So I find it valuable to give people options, meet them where they are, in order for them to have the best experience that they want to have. Mm-hmm. Because I think at the end of the day, especially, you know, when the goal is for you to not just connect, but engage and also create these experiences that your customers would, you know, want and also establish some kind of loyalty with you on, the best way to do that is to provide them options and provide them the ability to make it easy for them. And so this is where I say, like, it's almost a no-brainer, because you see it in businesses that do it very well, like not even on the web, but not from a digital space. But if they provide for you the options for you to make a choice as to how you want something to be, you're so much more engaged and you're so much more into it. So from a customer or a consumer user experience, I think it just makes just total sense to allow for the flexibility of being accessible and being versatile.
I love that. Okay, let's talk about solutions. And how do you specifically help online business owners ensure that their site is diverse, inclusive, and accessible, and ADA compliant too?
Right, exactly. I know. So I've been on the search for this, because the reality is, option one was always to just go to your developer. There are guidelines. And again, this guideline scenario, there's like, it's a 15-page, you know, PDF breakdown of all the things you need to do. So there is option one to say, you know what, let's go through these guidelines and pick out the ones that we can do immediately, the ones that may involve a little bit more extra. But it does come down to you collaborating with a website designer, or I will say in this case, not even designer, more so developer, because a lot of these things are technical code changes that may need to happen in order to bring your site to some kind of compliance, right? Majority of websites out there in the world, and I didn't say this in the beginning, but ADA compliance used to only mean something to federal or like public platforms. So like if you were a federal government website, if you were, you know, something that deemed with the masses, they were required to meet these guidelines.
Okay.
In today's day and age, it's not requirement yet in terms of being compliant. So I'm going to put that out there and just kill that, because I know a lot of people are like, oh my gosh.
I'm sure people are spinning as they listen to this. And I don't mean to, we're not trying to fear monger. We're trying to educate and provide solutions here. But I know that when my friend got the letter, I was like, what? You know?
Yes. But that's what I was going to say. It's not a requirement, but just be warned that if you're not incorporating or at least becoming intentional about how you're responding to this, you can get those demand letters, and you do have the potential of someone coming to you and bringing it to your attention in a not positive light. So that's why I think it's important to just mention, you know, that. But so option one, like I said, was developer, work with him or her and hopefully you don't spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars, which it can add up because it is a lot of custom code. And in this day and age where we have platforms like Squarespace, Wix, Weebly, Show It, all these platforms that are templated sites, it's hard to add and customize to the point of making it so that you would actually like verify that your site is compliant.
Yeah.
So that's option one. I do think though, it's worth the exercise of just knowing some things you can do like today. And we're going to talk about that. I'll leave you with some nuggets that you can definitely do today. Then it brought me to the path of, oh my gosh, like, are there applications? Are there widgets? Are there plugins you can do that can make your site more compliant? And reality is like, if you're on WordPress, there are plugins that say that they do help. None of them, and I say this, you know, to be honest, none of them handle all the things.
Okay.
They all handle about 25 to 35% of the things. But I did happen to find, because this seems to be like the new trend, are there these overlay applications that allow for someone, when accessed, meaning that they have to click on the icon of the little overlay, it opens it up. And it allows for your site to be manipulated so that it could meet the user or the website visitor where they are. And so those are the options. You know, if you think about it, get with your web developer, look into some of these plugins, because there are, like I said, when it comes specifically with WordPress, there are ADA compliant plugins that you can possibly add to your website. And then the option three is to provide, you know, put one of these overlays on, which to me, I, over the summer, spent some time last year and also towards the end of the year talking to a lot of the developers that are creating these overlays, in that it had me reach to the point of saying, you know, it's actually not a bad idea to have these overlays, because they not only allow for the website visitor to be met where they are and make the choice of what they want to do, whether they want to make the fonts bigger, make it so that the colors are more vibrant or less vibrant. It has all these different additions that you can do. And then it also allows for them to turn things on and off at need be. So maybe today they're having more issue with their eyes, and then tomorrow it's not so bad, so they turn it off. So it allows for the flexibility for you to literally meet people where they are at the time of them visiting your website, as opposed to the other way where if you do these changes, they're kind of permanent. So
real quick for the listeners, if you guys want to see one of these overlays in action, head to prooftoproduct.com. You'll see in the bottom, I think it's left-hand side, there's a little red icon and you can see this overlay in action. We added it to my site. Was that in December?
I feel like it was December. Yeah, I think it was end of the year.
I think we, and so we've had it up for a while and it's been really fascinating to see how it's been used. So if you want to check that out in terms of from a user experience standpoint, you can go there. But what I wanted to ask you in terms of follow-up to that, with the overlays too, with these companies who this is their primary business, I assume that they are then keeping up with changes to the laws and increasing the technology. And like, I feel like the maintenance part is kind of handled. Whereas with the developer, you'd have to bring them back to do maintenance. With the plugins, you have to hope, and hopefully they're doing this, but like you have to hope that they're maintaining and updating things on their end. But with an overlay company like this, I don't know, maybe it's a false sense of security, but
it's real though. No, because they're constantly, I mean, I know specifically with the company that I've partnered with, they've received a ton of seed money in development. In the second phase, like they've already launched, they've been successful, they've been featured on over like 2000 plus, you know, websites every month, all the things, but they're still continuing to get investment money towards development, which is adding to the fact that, and I've seen that they're making changes on the regular.
Yeah.
So
are there any downsides to these types of technologies?
So in terms of down things, I would say if you have a website that has a lot of movement or a lot of feature rich things, like you have not just a messenger chat bot for Facebook, but you also have that frequently somebody just bought, or you have all these different things that are supposed to be the triggers to hopefully get someone to convert, that could compromise the application user experience, because again, this is used as an overlay. And so I know that they have been dealing with a lot of the nuances of that, even though when you use these overlays, they actually claim and say, like, we're not responsible for any additional apps or supplementary widgets that you're adding to your website. So that's something to consider. And I will say, actually, in this day and age, clean sites are always the better sites anyway. When people start adding all these extra functionalities and features to their websites, and it's funny because I can actually notice, like, what was it, like 2 years ago, everybody was all into like the parallax, like the flowing and moving parts and all these things. Fast forward to today, and it's like people are slowing down with that because they're realizing it's not as effective, and it also slows down your website. So
Well, frankly, we're all like overstimulated too. We need a little like white space in our websites these days.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of busyness. And so anyway, if you have a lot of these features and it's very feature rich with all of these moving parts, sometimes that could cause an issue. Otherwise, I mean, I feel like when they're very, you know, straightforward, clean sites, they seem to be very effective.
Yeah. What about, I mean, you know, most of my audience is product people. So a lot of them are on Shopify. Shopify can get like just, they can have a lot of products. They can have a lot of apps that they're adding. And do you think that that would be affected with the use of something like this overlay?
So it's funny you ask, because I actually, when I met with the developers, I actually went over a Shopify website with them specifically because of that reason.
Yeah.
Because I was like, these are the websites that'll change, aside from a blog with a lot of dynamic content. But I was like, how are you handling the product pages and all the things? And actually, we went through this whole exercise, and the way that the app works actually is very effective. I mean, it actually, and I'll add this too, the one thing that I do like about these accessibility overlays is they do work in tandem with SEO in hopes to optimize your website as well. So they have a portion of their application that works off of AI. Mm-hmm. That if in the event that you don't have alternative text on your website for any images, they use AI in order to place that in.
Okay.
Now, I don't recommend you doing that because I think when it comes to your product and your content on your website, you know best how to describe the visual images, but this is here just as a fail-safe in the event that you don't. So for example, with a product website, it will look at all your images because most of the time people hopefully are adding alt images, but it will add that in and it will actually like work very well. So
okay.
I was pretty pleased when I saw the Shopify demonstration compared to...
Okay. That's great to hear because I think about 70% of our community members, like our PaperCamp students and our labs members, are on Shopify. And I know too, there's always grumblings about how many apps they're using and different things like that. So I'm glad to hear that if they were to do something like this, it wouldn't impact that other stuff, hopefully. But it's good to go back and check too. Okay. So these overlay options, we think that's the best option. I know you've done a lot of homework on this and deep research. It's very clear how knowledgeable you are, Myrna. So thank you for sharing with us today. But you offer support to online business owners, whether it's that they just want this overlay technology or you have packages that include the technology piece and, I don't know if you call it coaching or mentoring or educate. There's an educational component though too. So do you want to talk about how you work with brands and how they could work with you if they're interested?
Yeah. So I offer the ability for the application to be installed on your website. I take care of the installation because I know that sometimes could be a question mark for a lot of people.
It was for me. Myrna, just do it.
Exactly. That's what it comes down to. And I did it. But yeah, so that's the simple part. But because as I mentioned, like optimization as a whole, like that's pretty much what I feel like. I was just talking to somebody the other day about, oh my gosh, I breathe, sleep, and like do all things optimization. Like down to like when I'm folding my clothes, my mom will yell at me about this. She's just like, why does it have to be folded this way? I'm like, because it fits the best and it's all. So I realize optimization is a thing for me. But the services that I provide is where we can have monthly calls where we're not just talking about accessibility, but we're talking about all the things, including SEO, which again, when it comes to your digital home and your website, it's very important to make sure that you are optimizing yourself again, because the goal is what? To increase visibility and also for people to connect and have you found more. So I have this whole series and I have a tier level where we can chat once a month or quarterly, but it's there to help in terms of providing education, insight. And to your point, Katie, this stuff is always changing. So it's good to like be in the loop because again, you could think you're doing something great today, and then tomorrow it could totally, you know, switch up and you'll have to do something else.
Yeah. So just to reiterate for everyone listening, they have the option to work with you to just get the technology, the overlay added to their site. You'll take care of that for them. Or if they're looking for someone to kind of be a tech advisor, SEO, optimization, all of that stuff, that you have other packages that include this tech overlay, but then also the educational component and mentoring, which is awesome.
Oh, thank you.
I also want to tease that you're going to come teach a program inside of our labs community. And so if people are interested in learning more about that, be sure to join our email list and I'll share all the details when that comes up, but it won't be for a little while. But Myrna, this has been really eye-opening and enlightening. And I know we've been having conversations about this behind the scenes for months now, but I'm just so grateful for you showing up and sharing this with my audience, because I think this is a necessity. Like, it's not even an option at this point. It feels like it's a necessity to make our digital presence diverse, inclusive, and accessible for a much wider range of people.
100%. I think it's so important. Again, specifically because of the year that we've had, it is so important to establish yourself as a business that stands behind, not just moralistically and value-wise, becoming more inclusive or being more inclusive, but again, meeting people where they are. I think providing people the ability to be flexible enough that, you know, when they feel like using something, they can, or they don't have to. And that is a luxury. And that is you providing a value add. So yeah. I think it's important as a whole.
That's a really good point too. Like, when we talk about value add, sometimes it's just in the customer experience. Sometimes it's in the way people are navigating your site or engaging with your content. Thank you.
I've had people where they've just been like, because you had this on the site, I am definitely committed.
Yeah.
Which I think is amazing. Like, not even that they even used it, but because they knew that from the standpoint of you thinking it through enough as a business, that you're making yourself to be as a goal more accessible, mm-hmm. provided a ton of value or a certain amount of value for them to convert.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about your services? And again, we'll include these in the show notes, but tell everyone where to follow you on social and your website.
All the things. Yep. So I'm pretty easy. You just go to MyrnaDurami.com. I know it's hard to spell, but there's not that many Myrnas, so it makes it a little easy. But also on social, Myrna P. Durami is my social thread name or profile name. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
Pretty easy. The application itself is called Active ADA that I provide to my clients. So you can always go to activeada.com as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Myrna. We really appreciate your time, your expertise, and just the care you put into teaching this as well. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. This has been so great. I always love talking to you, Katie. So, you know, I'm always here for you and your community.
Thank you. The feeling is oh so mutual. All right, friends, a couple of key takeaways that I want to hone in on as we wrap up this episode. First, this isn't just a risk management move. Although I certainly don't want you being sued for not having an accessible website, having a diverse, inclusive, and accessible website will help you attract a more diverse and inclusive audience and customer base. It will also lead to a better user experience for your online customers. So I just wanted to reiterate those points from Myrna. Second, the technology can sometimes feel really overwhelming, which is why I would recommend you check out Myrna's services. She has flexible plans available to you to give you as much or as little support as you need. And third, this is a good reminder that we don't need to be the expert in all of the things within our business. We can lean on experts in different areas to guide us, to mentor us, to show us the way. Whether it's a business coach, a tech advisor, a lawyer, or an accountant, these people are experts who can help us make stronger decisions in our business that will set us up for future success. So on that note, if you are looking for more support in your business, I strongly encourage you to join me in Proof to Product Labs. It is my 12-month group coaching program built specifically for product-based business owners. I host monthly live training with guest experts like Myrna. We do coaching calls with me, and we offer peer masterminding where you can connect with peers that are at a similar level of business. So head over to prooftoproduct.com/labs to enroll and see our upcoming programming. One quick perk too is you also get access to our archives of trainings so that you can get the help you need when you need it most. You can laser focus in on the things you need help with. So again, enroll at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you found it helpful, and I will be back next week with a new episode.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.